All right. How's everybody doing? I heard a great. Anyone else great? That was weak. All right, you are good. Well, we started a new series last week, if you were here, on the Book of Ruth. And if you remember, the Book of Ruth starts off with a story about a woman named Naomi. She lives in this little village of Bethlehem in Israel, and there's a famine in the land, and so she picks up and she moves with her husband and her two sons to the neighboring country of Moab. And life is not easy for Naomi in Moab. As soon as she gets there, her husband dies, and then we hear that her two sons marry Moabite women, and for 10 years they go by, and neither of her daughters-in-law can have children. And so for these 10 years, they're wondering what's sort of the future for Naomi. And then both of her sons die. And so she's left a foreigner, an immigrant, a poor, a widow in this land of Moab. And she decides to go back to Bethlehem. And when she gets back there, you remember what she says? She shows up and she tells the people who she sees when she gets back home to Bethlehem. She says, "Don't call me Naomi anymore." Because Naomi in Hebrew means pleasant or good. She says, "Call me Mara. Call me bitter. Because God has made my life very, very bitter." So she's gone through a tough season. We read at the very end of the first chapter of Ruth last week, the last verse, it says, if there's any silver lining at all, it says that Naomi comes back to Bethlehem, but she's not alone. She comes back with one of her daughters-in-law named Ruth, the Moabite, and they come back at the beginning of the barley harvest, and a new chapter in their story begins.
It so happened that Naomi had a relative on her husband's side, a man prominent and rich from Elimelech's family. His name was Boaz. One day Ruth, the Moabite immigrant, said to Naomi, "I'm going to work. I'm going out to pick up leftover grain, following after some harvesters who will treat me kindly." Naomi said, "Go ahead, dear daughter." And so she set out. She went and started gleaning in a field, following in the wake of the harvesters. Eventually, she ended up in the part of the field owned by Boaz, her father-in-law, Elimelech's relative. A little later, Boaz came out from Bethlehem greeting his harvesters. "Yahweh God be with you," they replied, "and Yahweh God bless you." Boaz asked his young servant, who was foreman over the farmhands, "Who is this young woman? Where did she come from?" The foreman said, "Why, that's the Moabite girl, the one who came with Naomi from the country of Moab. She asked permission. 'Let me glean,' she said, 'and gather among the leftover grain following after your harvesters.' She's been at it steady ever since, from early morning until now, without so much as a break." Then Boaz spoke to Ruth, "Listen, my daughter, from now on, don't go to any other field to glean. Stay right here in this one, and stay close to the young women who work for me. Watch where they are harvesting and follow them. And don't worry about a thing. I've given orders to my men not to harass you. When you get thirsty, feel free to go and drink from the water buckets that my men have filled." She dropped to her knees, then bowed her face to the ground. "How does this happen, that you should pick me out and treat me so kindly? Me, a foreign immigrant." Boaz answered her, "I've heard all about you. Heard about the way you treated your mother-in-law after the death of her husband, and how you left your own father and mother and the land of your birth, and have come to live among a bunch of total strangers. May Yahweh God reward you well, reward you lavishly for what you've done, for you have come to Yahweh, the God of Israel, as a little bird seeking shelter under the wing of its mother." She said, "Oh, sir, such grace, such kindness, I don't deserve it. You've touched my heart, treated me like one of your own, and I don't even belong here." At the lunch break, Boaz said to her, "Come over here, eat some bread, dip it in the wine." So she joined the harvesters. Boaz passed the roasted grain to her. She ate her fill and even had some left over. When she got up to go back to work, Boaz ordered his servants, "Let her glean where there's still plenty of grain on the ground. Make it easy for her. Better yet, pull some of the good stuff out and leave it for her to glean. Give her special treatment." Ruth gleaned in the field until evening. When she threshed out the grain she had gathered, she ended up with nearly a full 30-pound sack of barley. She gathered up her gleanings, went back to town, and showed her mother-in-law the results of her day's work. She also gave her the leftovers from her lunch. Naomi asked her, "So where did you glean today? Whose field? Yahweh God bless whoever it was who took such good care of you." Ruth told her mother-in-law, "The man with whom I work today, his name is Boaz." Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, "Why, Yahweh God bless that man. Yahweh God hasn't quite walked out on us after all. He still loves us, in bad times as well as good." Naomi went on, "That man, Ruth, is a close relative of ours, one of our circle of guardian redeemers." Ruth, the Moabite immigrant, said, "Well, listen to this. He also told me, stick with my workers until my harvesting is finished." Naomi said to Ruth, "That's wonderful, dear daughter. Do that. You'll be safe in the company of the young women who work for him. No danger now of being raped in some stranger's field." So Ruth did it. She stuck close to Boaz's young women, gleaning in the fields daily until both the barley and wheat harvesting were finished. And she continued living with her mother-in-law.
So it was springtime when Ruth and Naomi returned to Bethlehem. And in the spring, during that time in the nation of Israel, they would have been celebrating what was called the Festival of Weeks. This was a Hebrew festival, and in fact, Christians would later change the name to the Festival of Pentecost. You might have heard that word. But in the Old Testament, it was called the Festival of Weeks. And when they celebrated the Festival of Weeks in the spring, they really celebrated two things. One, they remembered the time when God had given the law to Israel. After they had come out of Egypt and Moses had led the people to Mount Sinai, it was during that springtime that God had given his Ten Commandments and the law to Israel. And so they celebrated this provision of God giving this law to them to order their society and to make their society be a good group of people. And so they celebrated that during the Festival of Weeks. But they also celebrated how God provided for them through nature. Because this was the time of the barley harvest and the time of the wheat harvest. And so as they gathered all the grain in, they would remember how God had provided this food for them every single year in the Festival of Weeks. But for Ruth and Naomi, it wouldn't have been a very celebratory time. They had returned to this little village of Bethlehem. Probably wasn't a huge village, maybe a couple hundred people, very small. But they returned with pretty much nothing. Naomi is a widow. She has no husband. The one thing in that very traditional society that gave a woman status, she didn't have. Ruth couldn't have children. She had tried for 10 years, and she was also a widow. So she was not only a widow, but she also couldn't have children. And so children, the other thing in that society that gave people status and significance, she didn't have. She was a Moabite, and the Israelites hated the Moabites, and the Moabites hated the Israelites. So she was an outcast. She was a foreigner. They were poor. They didn't have anything. They were pretty much the lowest class of society there was. So think about our own city. Think about the people that drift in and out of soup kitchens in downtown Denver. That would have been Naomi and Ruth. Think about the homeless guy standing on the corner with the sign. That would have been Naomi and Ruth. Think about the illegal aliens, the people that we wish would just go back to their country and not be such a burden on our society. That would have been Naomi and Ruth. So after they had arrived there, one day, Ruth comes to Naomi, and she says this, starting in verse 2 of Ruth, chapter 2. It says, "Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, 'Let me go to the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone else in whose eyes I find favor.' Naomi said to her, 'Go ahead, my daughter.' And so she went out and entered a field and began to glean behind the harvesters. And as it turned out, she found herself working in a field belonging to Boaz, who was from the clan of Elimelech. Now, what's going on here? Why is she doing this? Well, in God's law, he had given laws so that the community of Israel had these regular customs that they would practice, whereby they would make sure to take care of all the people who were poor, who were homeless, who were immigrants, who didn't have anything. And one of these laws were these gleaning laws. In fact, it says in Leviticus chapter 19, this is in the Old Testament law, starting in verse 9, it says, "When you reap the harvest of your land, do not reap to the very edges of your field or gather the gleanings of your harvest. Do not go over your vineyard a second time or pick up the grapes that have fallen. Leave them for the poor and the foreigner. I am the Lord, your God." So they were mostly an agriculture-based community, and so that's how they got most of their food. They would go and grow it in the fields. And if you were a wealthy man like Boaz, you owned fields and you had workers. And what this law is saying is that you need to leave, picture a square or a rectangular field, that when you go and you harvest the field, you need to leave the edges. And then another place it says you need to leave the corners. So when you cut the corner and you kind of make a circle there, you leave the corners and the edges untouched. And then also, I don't want you to go over your fields two times or three times or four times. I just want you to go over once. So leave the edges, leave the corners, just go through them once. And anything that you don't pick up, I want you to leave there for those in your community, in your city, who have fallen on hard times, who don't have food, who don't have any way of providing for themselves, so that they can come along and they'll at least have something by going to the edges and the corners and picking up the leftovers that you didn't get the first time. This was the custom that God put in place to take care of the poor in their community. Now, I'd love to just stop and ask a question. What kind of customs do we have in place to take care of the poor in our community? And I don't mean like organized church programs. I mean like, well, what kind of customs do we as a community of faith here at New Denver Church, what kind of customs do we have in place to help out people when they're in need, when they fall on hard times, when they're going through a difficult season in life? Well, what kind of customs do you have in your family? Like, do you have any regular habits or practices? What kind of customs do you maybe have in your small group? Have many of us are in small groups here. Have any of your small groups come together and said, hey, is there something we can regularly do to look out for people in our lives, in our workplaces, in our neighborhoods, maybe in our city who have fallen on hard times? See, that's why we encourage people even during this holiday season to go and give some time volunteering at Denver Rescue Mission, or and it doesn't have to be that organization. There's tons of great ones here in the city. But what would it look like if we as a community of faith, just like the nation of Israel, had customs put in place whereby we were regularly doing things that helped out those who had fallen on hard times? Now, I got to be super honest tonight. I think this is pretty convicting for me personally, because honestly, I don't know that I have many customs in my life that push me to do this. Sometimes I feel like my kids, who in the last couple of weeks we've been talking about Christmas, and they've been telling us all the new toys that they want to get this Christmas. And so we kind of gather them together and we say, look, kids, you have so many toys. Like, you have so much. You get toys in your closet that you don't even play with anymore, that you could care less about. And you know what? There's lots of kids in our city who don't have many toys at all, and who probably aren't going to get any toys for Christmas. So could we like take some of your toys and give them to some other kids who don't have any? And it's almost like our kids always are like, no, no, they're my toys. Like, they're not any, they're my toys. And I look at them and it's like I see a picture of selfishness there. And in many ways, sometimes I see myself. Because I'm so focused on my own life and my own needs and my own wants and my own desires and my own stuff and my own worries that I don't even think about all of the people out there who don't even have a field to harvest. So am I leaving the edges? Am I leaving the corners? Am I leaving things for them? Am I getting outside of myself? Because that was the reason that God put these laws into place in Israel. In fact, oftentimes he would say, look, you know how I know whether you love me or not, God? I want to see how you love the poor and the marginalized in your neighborhoods, in your cities, in your villages. Because when you love the people who most people think are unlovable, when you love them, when you care for them and serve them, you're really showing your love for me. See, Jesus would say the same thing. You remember when he showed up one time and he said, you know, when you see someone who's hungry or you see someone who's thirsty or you see someone who doesn't have a roof over their head and you give them food or you give them drink and you take care of them and you provide them shelter, you know what? You're really doing that for me. Like every homeless person you see, every person that's down in their luck, every person that's going through a tough time in life, when you reach out and care for them, you're doing it for me. And it's almost like Jesus and God, through the law in the Old Testament, are looking back at us and saying, look, here's what you have to understand. Every time you see somebody who is physically poor, that should be a reminder to you of how you were once spiritually poor. Because there was a time in your life when you were spiritually poor, when you were spiritually empty, when you were spiritually broken, and I came in and I loved you and I gave you grace and I gave you mercy and I gave you compassion, not because you deserved it, but just because I saw the situation you were in. In fact, he talks about those who are poor in spirit. And so it's almost like God is saying, look, every time you see someone who's physically poor, that should be like a mirror or reflection looking back at you and reminding you of when you were spiritually poor. And so when you reach out to them and show them the kind of grace that I showed you, what you're doing is living out the gospel message. Like, you're not just accepting it intellectually and saying, well, I believe, you know, Jesus, you're the Son of God. I believe you died for my sins. I believe you did all that. But you know how I know if you really believe that, not just in your head, but in your heart? You'll be living it out. And you'll be showing that same kind of grace and compassion and mercy to people who need it, who are broken and empty. So I think I look at this and I ask the question, are we a community that has regular customs that's pushing us to show that kind of love and grace and concern to those in our communities, in our neighborhoods, in our city, who are down and out, who are going through tough seasons in life? Well, the story goes on. And we see that when Ruth gets to this field and she begins to glean, she meets a man named Boaz. And we see through the story that God's provision for Ruth and Naomi, who really are the poor and the marginalized, isn't just through the community of faith and isn't just through the customs he's put in place, but it's also through people of character. And Boaz is indeed a man of character. Look at what he says when he first meets Ruth. In verse 8, it says, "So Boaz said to Ruth, 'My daughter, listen to me. Don't go and glean in another field, and don't go away from here. Stay here with the women who work for me. Watch the field where the harvesters are working, and follow along after or with the women. I have told the men not to lay a hand on you, and whenever you are thirsty, go and get a drink from the water jars the men have filled.'" So look at what Boaz does for Ruth. First, he says, "You can stay in my fields and glean." Now, he didn't have to do this. Like, he didn't have to obey the law. He could have kicked her out. He could have said, "You can go to someone else's fields and glean." But he didn't. He said, "You can stay in my fields." But then he goes even above and beyond the law. Now, to understand what's going on, you have to understand how this worked. When a man like Boaz owned this field, he would have been wealthy and prominent. There would have been very few men like this in the village, but he was one of them. And he would have hired men workers who would have done the initial harvesting. So the first wave of men would have come through the field, and they would have had a huge sickle, you know, the big, the Grim Reaper you know, sickle. You know, picture that. So they would have had this huge sickle, and they would have grabbed a bunch of barley, and they would have chopped it, and then laid the bunch down. And then they would have grabbed another one and chopped it, and then laid the bunch down. And they would go through the entire field with this huge sickle doing that. Well, then the second wave of workers, and these were usually women workers, would come through, and the women workers would grab all of the bundles of barley or the bundles of wheat. They would tie them up, and then they would carry them over to the barn and to the threshing floor, which was a place where they would thresh the barley or the wheat. So they would remove the raw kernels from the husk. And the husk, you know, they just threw away, but it was the raw kernels which they ended up eating or using for cooking. So there was the first group of men who did the chopping, the second group of women workers who would come through and bundle it up and take it to the threshing floor. And then after that was done, then the third group of the people who were poor could come by and get the leftover grain. But Boaz says to her, look, you can work with my women. I'm not going to just give you the leftover stuff. I'm not going to just let you have the corners or the edges. I'm going to let you go along with my women, and you can get the best of the stuff. In fact, he goes on later, and remember he tells his men, he says, I want you to cut down some huge stalks and lay them down just for Ruth. Now, I think this is amazing because Boaz could have asked the question, like, what's the least I need to do to take care of these people? And I think that's the question sometimes we ask as well. I mean, what's the least I need to do to help out people who are in need? Or what's the least I need to give? That's an easy question. Like, is it 10%? Do I need to give 10% to the church and to charity or whatever? Like, is that how much I am I supposed to be giving? And once I've given that much, am I kind of good to go? Like, if I volunteer, like, 2 hours at Denver Rescue Mission on a Saturday once a month, like, is that enough? Like, have I done my share to feel good about doing something for someone else? That's how I tend to think. And yet Boaz doesn't ask that at all. He doesn't say, well, what's the least I need to do to take care of these people who are a burden on our community? He goes the opposite direction. And I think in this, we begin to see what true character is. Because the letter of the law said, let the poor, widows, and immigrants, and orphans, let them glean. But the spirit of the law said, feed them. Take care of them. Make sure that they don't go without. And so Boaz, if you really want to see what character is not what's the letter of the law, like what do I need to do? Character is, what do I have the opportunity to do to take care of these people and love them in the way that God has loved me? You see, character isn't, well, how much do I need to give? You know, give me an exact amount or how much time or whatever. Character is, look, God, in light of all the money you've given me, in light of all the stuff you've given me, in light of all the opportunities you've given me, in light of all the time I've got, in light of all the blessings that you've given me in my life, how can I then pass on some of those blessings to other people in the same way that you gave them to me? That's what Boaz does. You read on and you see he doesn't even just do that. He goes on and he tells her, look, when you get tired, you take a break. When you get thirsty, you can have some of my water. When you get hungry, you can have some of my food. And you know what, Ruth? I don't want you going to any other field. And let's not romanticize this or idealize this. Like, this wasn't a pretty picture. I mean, this was more like, you've maybe seen pictures of people in Central America going through garbage dumps. I mean, that's really kind of what this was about. This was the poor and the marginalized getting the leftover scraps of everyone else. And so a woman like Ruth, a young foreign woman, I mean, these kind of fields would have been dangerous. Somebody could have come along and done violence against her. Somebody could have come along and raped her. Somebody could have come along and basically taken her into slavery. And so Boaz looks at her and he says, look, I'll protect you. I'll take care of you. I'm going to tell my men workers and my women workers to look out for you. And I don't want you going to any other field. And I'm going to give you food and I'm going to give you plenty of drink. Oh, and by the way, you can stay here in my field as long as the barley harvest continues and as long as the wheat harvest continues. See, Boaz is an extreme example of a man of character. Now, why is he so gracious like this to Ruth? Like, why does he go out of his way to give her so much? In fact, this is the question she asked. She says this. It's in verse 10. She comes back to Boaz, and as he says this, it says, "At this, she bowed down with her face to the ground, and she asked him, 'Why have I found such favor in your eyes that you would notice me, a foreigner?'" Well, as we've already said, I think part of it is because Boaz is a man of character. Part of it might have been because he saw something in Ruth. Now, there are people who read into this like, is this the love story that's starting to happen? Like, maybe across the field, you know, Boaz's eyes and Ruth's eyes kind of catch each other and something's going on here. But that's not what was going on. Like, there's nothing in this chapter to hint that that's what's going on. And don't forget who these people are. I mean, Boaz, we don't know exactly, but he's probably a bit older than Ruth, probably 15, 20, 25 years older. He's probably married and has children. I mean, he probably already has a family. Don't forget who he is. He is a wealthy, upper-class, prominent Israelite man. Ruth is a lower-class, widowed, barren, can't-have-children, Moabite, who-we-hate woman. There would have been no attraction whatsoever for Boaz here. So why is he so gracious towards her? Well, part of it is because he sees something in her. He sees character in Ruth. Look at how he responds in the next verse, verse 11. It says, "Boaz replied, 'I've been told all about what you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, how you left your father and mother and your homeland and came to live with a people that you did not know before.'" You see, Boaz had heard the story of Ruth. He had asked around. It's a small village. When Naomi had showed up, people had seen and recognized Naomi, and they had heard about, oh, Ruth, her daughter-in-law, that Moabite woman that one of her sons married, decided to come back with her. And he saw something in her. He had heard the story because people had been talking about what this woman had done, and when there was no real reason, there was no logical reason that she should have come back to Israel. I mean, there was nothing in Israel for Ruth. She should have stayed in Moab, where she had family, where she had the only possibility of maybe getting remarried, maybe having children, maybe having a life. There's no reason whatsoever. And yet, for somehow, some way, we saw last week, Ruth looked at Naomi and she said, "I'll go back with you. I'll bear this burden with you. I will be with you, and we will somehow figure out what God's hand is in all of this." And Boaz saw that. And you know what? I think character like that Ruth has and that Boaz has, it's a bit contagious. It's a bit infectious. And when Boaz saw it in Ruth, there's something in him that just wanted to reach out to her and help her out because of that. But I don't know if that's even the real reason that he was really drawn to reach out and help her. Because look at what he says. We get a clue in the very next verse. He goes on, and he says in verse 12, "May the Lord repay you for what you have done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, by Yahweh God, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." And the image here that Boaz paints is of a little bird who's lost, who's cold, who's not safe, who needs some protection, who comes flying back to hide under the wings of its mother. And he says, look, it's not necessarily about all that you've done. It's not necessarily about what you deserve. I'm not doing all of this because you've done great things or you've accomplished so much or because you're a great person. I mean, you do seem like a nice person. You do seem like you have character. But you haven't earned this. You haven't deserved this. The reason I'm loving you in this way is because you have sought refuge in God. And this is a picture of the way God loves us. that when we come to Him, when we're down and when we're out and when we're going through tough times and when none of our prayers seem to be getting answered and none of the things in our lives seem to be going right, when we come to God and seek refuge in Him and say to Him, look, God, I need You. Like, I have nothing left anymore. Like, I just need to hide under the shadow of Your wing right now. And I'd love for You to answer all my questions, but I know You might not do that. And I'd love for You to answer all my prayer requests in the way that I want You to, and I know You might not do that. But more than anything else, I just need Your presence in my life right now. That's what Ruth did. And when she did that, Boaz reached out, and Boaz was God's presence and provision in her and Naomi's life. And we know that that day she stayed there and she gleaned. She got all of this barley. As they added it up, and we don't know because some of the measures are kind of weird in ancient Hebrew, but we think it's like 30 or 40 or 50 pounds that she took home with her to Naomi that day. And she came in and she brought some leftover food. And for the first time in maybe an entire decade, Ruth and Naomi began to see their fortunes turn around. Now, before we close, I want to ask three specific questions just to challenge us to think about this story as we put ourselves in it and as we see what's going on. The first question is this. Do we have regular customs in our community that reach out and help those who are in need? Do we have them? Because the truth is, if we don't have these regular habits or practices or customs, we won't do it. Because we've got enough on our own plates. Like, we have enough worries to think about in our own lives. We've got enough stuff going on at work and at home and just baggage and all kinds of stuff. Like, we've got plenty going on. And so it's almost like we need these kind of customs that are going to push us out and keep us focused outward to say, you know what? Leave the edges. Leave the corners. Don't go over everything twice or three or four times. Because the truth is, even though your life is rough and even though things are going and bad and even though you've got plenty to worry about in your own life, there's people out there who have a whole lot more going on. And you could do something to help them walk through what they're going through. I've given you enough so that you need some regular customs in place that'll keep you looking outward and recognize that all the stuff I've given you, you can begin to pass some of that along to others who are in need. Second question. What kind of character do you have? Have you ever asked that question? Like, just stop and ask it for a second. What kind of character do I have? Like, if you ask 10 of your friends or maybe your family, like to say, like, what kind of character do you think I have? How would they answer it? Well, what kind of character do we want to have? Let me address for a second. Maybe if you're a dad or your father out there, what kind of character do you want your children to see in you? Like, if they were to identify what kind of character you have, would they say, my dad's got the kind of character that he works really, really hard at work, and he accomplishes a lot, and he makes a lot of money, and we have a big house? Because that's the kind of character my dad is trying to have. Is that the kind of character we want our kids to see in us? Because if we do, guess what? That's the kind of character they're going to have when they grow up. But if we step back and say, no, that's not really what character is. If I can step back for a second and model for my kids that character means looking at all the stuff that God has given me, all the time and the possessions and the money and the opportunities and the blessings, and saying, God, is there a way that I can leverage some of that, not just to meet my own needs, but to also meet the needs of other people? Because the truth is, You probably gave me all that stuff, not just for me, but also to help other people. If we can do that, that will demonstrate the kind of character that we need to demonstrate. And that's not just if you have kids. You might be here and you might be single, or you might be married and not have kids at all. And guess what? You've probably got more opportunities. You've probably got more chances, more blessings, more time, more availability to demonstrate the kind of character that God has called us to have. And you see, if we're Christians, and I know maybe not all of us here are, and you might still have some big questions about God and trying to figure that out, and that's great. But for those of us who are here tonight and would say, yes, I'm a Christian, I follow Jesus Christ, we should be doing this better than anyone else, because the truth is, the story of Christ is a story of God coming down and saying, you know what? I'm not going to give just a little bit. Like, I'm not going to just give 10%. I'm not going to just give the edges and the corners and the leftovers. I'm going to give my entire life, everything, for their benefit. So if we're followers of Jesus, that's the kind of Jesus we follow. Somebody said, I'm going to give everything for the benefit of others who are in need. That's true character. Third question. We've been looking through the eyes of Boaz for a little bit. I'd like to step back and look through the eyes of Ruth one more time. Where are you seeking God's refuge in your life? Where are you running to Him right now? Is there a place in your life? Maybe it's your finances. Things aren't going so great. Maybe it's a specific relationship. Maybe it's a parent or a sibling or a family member or a spouse or a kid or somebody at work. You know, where is it right now that you are running to God and saying, God, I cannot do this anymore. Like, I just can't do it anymore. And I need you. I am 100% right now dependent on you. Because the truth is, we're all dependent on God. Some of us are just more aware of it than others. And so are we asking the question, God, would you make me aware? Would you help me to acknowledge my full dependence on you right now? Can I just run to you and seek your refuge? Because Jesus showed up, and you remember what he said one day? He said, for all you who are tired and weary, just come to me and I'll give you rest. My guess is that most of us could say we're a little tired and weary right now. There are some parts of our lives where we're just tired and weary. So are we running to God? Are we running to Jesus and saying, I just need rest right now? God, would you be present? God, would you be the Jesus that we worship at Christmas, who is Emmanuel, God with us? Last week, first chapter, we saw God's hand in our suffering. This week, we see God's hand in our needs. Next week, the story takes a very interesting turn. So I hope you'll come back, because we'll see God's hand when we step out in faith and take bold risks for Him. So let me close this in a word of prayer. Lord God, thanks so much for this story again. It's such a real story. It's such a human story. Thanks for the example of Boaz. Somebody that we can follow, someone that we can see who does just something tangible to reach out and show love to someone else. Lord, I pray that if you brought someone to mind in our minds tonight, that we could maybe reach out and help, that you give us the courage to follow up on that and do something. Lord, I pray that you would help us all to put customs into place where we're continuing to look outward. And more than anything else, Lord, I pray that you'd help us run to you when we need refuge. Because the truth is, God, your grace is enough for us. Your grace is sufficient. And your grace and your love are perfected in us, even when we're empty and broken and weak. So thank you for sending your Son. Thank you for your love. Thank you for your grace. We pray all this in your name.